Hello, nerds. You're listening to an episode on the Nerdcore podcast feed. If you're feeling generous, please consider pledging to a tier on our Patreon at patreon.com/thenerdcore. We have tiers as low as $1 per month. Thanks so much, and enjoy the episode.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Nerdcore podcast, a podcast where we review movies and talks that nerd shit. This is episode 235, and it is your nerd news for the week. Well, kinda, because you know if anything breaks during the week, we're gonna go ahead and talk about it. And not a short one today. Today, it was actually filled with a lot of news today. As always, it's your nerd. You're gonna hear to host the show alongside my wonderful co-host. Brad, this is usually when you chime in.
Bitch better have my money.
Yeah, I don't know why you took a long time to kind of just...
Because you usually say my name, you fool.
Yeah, well, shut up, man. I want to try something different today. Yeah.
No. No.
All right, whatever. Well,
don't worry like that. You go away for a week and you forget how we do this shit.
Yeah, well, I ain't going away for a week. Yeah.
Felt like a week.
Well, you know... You know, when you were actually gone for a week at one point, okay? So shut up.
That's true. And, you know, we had the same issue.
Yeah. And I thought I was... I thought I had the wrong episode number, but no. Did not have the wrong episode number.
Where are we at?
235. I thought it was 236, but no, it's 235. And I said 235. So how are you?
Doing well, Raul. Doing well.
Yeah, yeah.
You sure we're not in the 240s?
Not yet, my friend. If we wouldn't have missed a couple of episodes, we would be on the 240s by now.
Mm.
Yeah. But life happened and numbers got mixed up. So
We'll get there.
Yeah. As always, we got, you know, news. We got trailer talk and we got the good old box office report coming to you guys. But first, let's go ahead and talk about the elephant in the room that just broke last week. These two news kind of go hand in hand with each other because... they did a whole, I don't know, it was Muschietti who tweeted it, but, you know, they were talking about how It Chapter 2 will be the only WB film to have a panel to have a presentation at San Diego Comic-Con, and it was released that, yeah, it was Muschietti on Instagram who talked about it. So then, what's it called, we look at this IGN article, and... It will not be supporting its upcoming superhero slate as it has in previous years with the studio's Hall H panel showings of Wonder Woman 1984 and Shazam in 2018. They're not going to be showing their there's not going to be a DC panel at Hall H. And if you guys wonder, well, is there any movies to be actually showing by San Diego Comic-Con this year? Yes, we would have three films that would be coming out. Joker in October this year. Birds of Prey in February that just wrapped shooting like 2 months ago, I think. And then Wonder Woman 1984, which we just got a new poster for. And what's it called? That wrapped shooting, like, I think a month ago as well. And then the Suicide Squad, I wouldn't expect footage from that because it would barely be starting to shoot, I think. But we would get at least casting info or something. But, Brad, what do you think about this? You know, DC not having a presence at Hall H.
I find it kind of weird because DC is one of those that kind of needs a presence.
Mm-hmm.
Because we saw Marvel do the same thing last year. They didn't really bring anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they weren't there.
Yeah, and DC really brought up Shazam and all that to that. But I can see it because, I mean, everything's probably... They probably don't have a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, we got a bunch of movies coming, but we already know about them. You know, we've seen trailers on them or teasers. So I can see why WB would bow out and want to focus more on it because after the first showing at it and how big a...
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it was a blockbuster. It was a horror blockbuster. Mm-hmm. And how they want to kind of push that because they know they're going to have a difficult time with a rated R movie.
And
so I can see them wanting to focus on that to bring out and put people in the seats.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are going to have... kind of disagree with me on this, but I don't think Joker is being marketed as a comic book movie. I think that's being marketed more as a, you know, psychological thriller film. And I don't think it needs a presence at Hall H, that movie. It's being marketed very differently, where it's going to be, you know, it's obviously on a comic book character, but it's more of like character analysis, which it doesn't, it's not going to really like, I'm going to walk out of there. I bet I'm going to have the same feeling that I had watching Logan, where I was like, yeah, this isn't a comic book movie. This is like a straight up Western. And I feel like that'll be the same thing with Joker. I'm going to say, yeah, this isn't like a comic book movie. It's like a straight up psychological thriller. And the only ones that I do feel like we could have a presence for at San Diego Comic-Con would be for Birds of Prey or Wonder Woman 1984. But, I mean, look, we already got our first poster for Wonder Woman 1984. That comes out in June of 2020 when Birds of Prey comes out in what's it called? February 2020. I'm thinking this. I think they're kind of getting things ready right now. And I think they're missing San Diego Comic-Con to have a New York Comic-Con presence. It's not the same thing as Hall H, but they're saying like, hey, we're not ready right now. Kind of like PlayStation at E3, right? You know, we don't have anything ready right now. We're going to take our time. And at the next convention, I think we might have something ready to show you guys. Of course, I feel like we're going to get our first, I feel like we're going to get a second trailer for Joker on San Diego Comic-Con. Of course, like, you know, they're going to release it that day. I don't think we'll get anything for Birds of Prey, but expect, I have a feeling that at New York Comic Con is when they're gonna come out with something. You know, Titan Season 2, I'm sorry. Maybe that as well at San Diego Comic Con, a trailer dropping that day. What do you think, Baron? Bro, what do you think about this poster, by the way? I love the golden armor on her, and this poster gives me like straight up 80s vibes. And the movie is set in 84.
Cool. Yeah, the Wonder Woman poster, that I mean, that it just looks great. Already, mm-hmm. And we've only seen the poster, so I'm already positive on it. I'm usually not positive on movies until I see the first trailer, but that poster brings good vibes, and knowing how much I like the first Wonder Woman, I can definitely tell I'm going to like this movie.
Yeah.
I'm about 80% sure on that.
Yeah.
But about the Joker, going back to that,
yeah.
You know, I also think it's probably really difficult to get Joaquin Phoenix to go to anything.
Yeah.
Especially at Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing I think is they got to work with that.
Yeah. So I just don't think San Diego Comic-Con is their big target right now. They're saying let's wait a little bit and at New York Comic-Con we can go.
Yeah, and like I said before, I think they're focused on it. It's ready to go. It's raring to go.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they're going to be pushing that out to try and get another $100 million box office off what wasn't supposed to be. Mm-hmm. The first was not supposed to be a huge blockbuster horror because, you know, it kind of broke the books on that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think chapter two, from what I've seen on chapter two, it's going to be good.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, it sucks that they won't have a Hall H panel, but that doesn't mean that something won't drop that day of San Diego Comic-Con. You know, WB isn't that stupid. You know, they'll release you a trailer a trailer for something, you know. So
I think Marvel did the same thing. I forget what they released, but I think they did release a teaser or something.
Oh, it was the Iron Fist Season 2 teaser.
Yes. So they did release something.
Yeah. It wasn't like Game of Thrones, you know. Game of Thrones wasn't at Hall H on San Diego Comic-Con, and they did not release anything that year at all.
Well, that's Game of Thrones, though. Yeah. We kind of expected that.
Yeah. Plus, they had barely started shooting, if I remember correctly. So, you know, let's go ahead and go into the Box Office Report, my favorite segment of the show. And let's go ahead and look at that top five and the bottom five, Brad. Holy crap. This weekend was something to remember. And it will go down in the in the record books for movie history. Because things did not go as well as they did. And Brad, here's one thing that stood way out to me. This was supposed to be the last weekend that, you know, that Avengers could get that last push. Because it was going to leave a lot of theaters. And it ended up making $4,800,000. Yeah, and it's all the way down at number eight.
I mean, you know, let's face it, the Avatar number is inflated somehow. I don't know. I always bring up, like, I don't know what drugs we were on back in the day, but that number is inflated to the point. It's ridiculous. And I really think Endgame was the only one that could topple it, and if it can't topple it, it's not going
to
be topple.
I don't think it's going to get to it now. I'm really shocked at the top five right now, because I expected a little bit of something else to, you know, be there. But look, Brad, what surprises you from the bottom five?
Ma's still at the top of the bottom five. I mean, it came in with 18 million opening. It's still pretty much right where it was at with 7,820,000. So it's just raking in the money. And I think it's one of those sleeper horror hits.
Yeah.
That to me is what I find like pretty awesome on their part. And I believe this was, Blumhouse. It was another Blumhouse. So Blumhouse is good at taking like almost no budget and then making a huge profit off it.
Yep. You gotta respect that, man. Like, it's crazy. So
plus the concept of that movie, you wouldn't think it would end up making, I think, almost 30 million at this point.
Mm-hmm. All right, Brad. Let's go ahead and go with the top five now. So number five this weekend, last weekend, because this comes out on Monday, Rocketman at $14 million. Number four was Godzilla King of the Monsters at $15,540,000. I did not expect that to happen. I thought it would go above Aladdin, but here we go with Aladdin at number three with $24,500,000. And number two, making his debut this weekend at $33 million, is Dark Phoenix, X-Men Dark Phoenix. And then at number one this weekend with a $47,110,000 is The Secret Life of Pets 2.
Which you called.
Called it.
You called that.
Called it, man. I told you, it was, first of all, the bad reviews, and then the bad word of mouth that came out from Thursday's showings, and then Friday. When I saw that number on Friday, I said, oh, yep. That's not gonna do it. Yeah, you know, after
Friday. Thing is, you called that before even the reviews came out.
Yeah, I told you, man. I told you. And I'm not gonna be talking about a quality standpoint here. I'm talking from a money standpoint from what I'm seeing right here. I think that Disney needs to learn from this, and I think they need to not drop New Mutants theatrically. I think that needs to go on Hulu because this is not gonna go the way that you think.
I think New Mutants are getting pushed back to 20 never.
Yeah, I think after this, you know, I don't think the right, this has a bad taste in people's mouth now. I don't think the right marketing will even push New Mutants to get a good theatrical release. Hulu is the destination for that, man. I'm telling you.
Well, I think we considered from the trailer Dark Phoenix to be the better movie, and for it to come out and basically just die for a liftoff.
Yeah.
That New Mutants is already dead.
Yeah.
And we've been saying that since the first trailer.
Yep.
Like, we have no idea why this is coming out and what's the point. I think if Disney pushes this and markets it and spends actual money on it, I think they're doing a disservice to themselves. They just need to, you know, not even do reshoots. Just edit it. Put it on Hulu, and basically you just get whatever money you get from ads.
Hold up. The reshoots have been paid for, I think. If I remember correctly, that's been added to the budget. So, you know, that's taken care of. I think what they're just waiting for right now is just to get all the cast together. So, you know, you can reshoot the movie, but put it on the streaming service because that's probably where it's going to do best.
Well, I'm just saying Disney doesn't need to spend more fucking money.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they bought Fox, just put out what Fox has spent. If Fox has already put money for reshoots, go ahead, do the reshoots. But if they haven't spent money for the reshoots and they put it on Disney, I say Disney just throw out whatever trash is there on Hulu.
I'd rather that money go to the editors who will probably do a good job at making it a semi-decent movie.
There's no making that a semi-decent movie.
Yeah, so, look, I'm surprised that Aladdin beat at number three. I really thought that Godzilla would be, higher. But like I said, even the director, Mike, Lionsgate, even said that they're not worried about Godzilla's domestic box office returns. I'm telling you, international's where this movie's thriving. So, you know, that's fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's where the big robot and big monster movies make the money.
Yeah.
Look at Pacific Rim. It wasn't domestic that made them all the money. That was international.
Alita as well. Alita made all the money in international.
And I'm glad Alita actually... And I knew Alita wasn't going to do well domestically, just on the subject matter. But I'm very happy that international came out to actually watch it.
Yeah.
Because it is a good movie.
Yeah. So now, well, let's go get a look for this weekend, Brett. It's going to be a pretty good one here. we have ourselves two movies coming up. And it is going to be Men in Black International and Shaft. So let me look at the box office numbers here. This is really, really disappointing, Brad. Men in Black International is tracking at a $39 million opening weekend, while Shaft is, you know, tracking at a $31 million opening weekend. Yeah, it's because Secret Life of Pets 2 just came out. You know, people are still going to want to go watch that. The kids, especially. I think that's why Men in Black International is going to get affected. But I think kind of underestimating this movie a little bit.
Maybe. I don't know. I think that's probably par for the course for a Men in Black movie. Men in Black has been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, because it's a reboot of the franchise. You don't have Will Smith in it. I don't think Tommy Lee Jones is in it. So you're really hoping that the new cast can carry it. And I don't know if people are going to go out and see it as much as they would if Will Smith was in it.
Yeah. People like Chris Hemsworth, though, and Tessa Thompson. So, you know, I want to see
this. It's a good cast. It's a good cast, but are they pulling in Will Smith numbers?
I don't think
Probably
so.
Not.
Yeah. Look, I want to say that it's going to come in under 39. I'm so sorry. I want this movie to do more than that, but I feel like Secret Life of Pets 2 is just going to do that. Expect Secret Life of Pets 2 to still be at number one with about 39, 38 million. It's going to drop a little bit.
Yeah, I can agree that. The kids. Mm. Plus, that movie's been getting good reviews, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And then I think Shaft is going to come like in the 20s.
Yeah.
Because that movie, it's not a big box office attraction. Shaft never really was.
No. Look, I can tell you, I can't predict the full numbers for these other ones, but I can tell you number one, Secret Life of Pets 2. Number two will be Men in Black International. Number three will be Aladdin. Number four will be Shaft. And number five will be Dark. Number five will be Godzilla.
Yeah, Dark Phoenix is going to drop like a rock.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that sucks. You know, because I don't ever want, you know, a movie to do badly because, you know, I want, like, of
Except
course.
Venom.
You know, yeah, but because they learned their lesson the hard way. Look, I never want to cheer for a movie to do badly, for people to, you know, to not have a successful run. But, you know, this was brought upon yourself when, you know, it's because, you know, why do you reshoot the whole ending? Like, it was plagued with reshoots. It was, you know, I have not watched the film yet, but, you know, this was a production that kind of was doomed from the start. You know, like Alex says, you basically retconned what happened in Apocalypse, and then you try the Dark Phoenix saga again. And I told Alex, you know, I don't care that they're doing this again. I understand you can't do Dark Phoenix in one movie. You can't. You have to build that emotional moment, and you really have to build that story to, you know, to happen. And the fact that they kind of retcon what happened in Apocalypse just so they can do this movie, it was doomed from the start.
Yeah, it's a mess. And even the original writer who was on the start of this had a vision, and the studio just went no, because they wanted money quicker and they didn't want to, you know, carry it out the way it should have been carried out, and which probably would have made them more money.
Yeah.
That's what you get for not listening to the people who know what the fuck they're talking about.
Man, I really would have loved to see what Matthew Vaughn would have done with that whole series after First Class. I was reading because Zach Stentz was on that Batman and Fat Man podcast thing, and he said that they were actually planning, you know, Fox was planning to do a whole big team up, Fantastic Four, X-Men, and Deadpool, in one movie.
I mean, I don't know. I trust Fox as far as I can throw him. I trust him as much as I trust Sony. I've really only seen like Disney come bring the only thing Fox has ever done good is the Deadpool. That's really because they were like, here's money, go make some. Yeah. They left it to the Deadpool to their own devices.
Yeah.
And that was really the only good superhero movie that Fox is actually, other than a few of the X-Men.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Class, a few of the X-Men have come out. Mm-hmm.
First Class, Days of Future Past. X2 is pretty damn good to me. Logan. Yeah, and that's kind of where I cut it.
I mean, I think they just accidentally walked into Deadpool and it was a hit. That's really how I see Fox on that.
Yeah. So look, let's go ahead and get, you know, we're moving on from this. We'll see how next weekend will happen. In the meantime, you know, keep your eyes on the box office. It's really interesting stuff. And we're going to go ahead and go into the news. This is something I'm really, really happy to be talking about already because The Rock just confirmed this on an Instagram post. So from Variety.com, from Justin Kroll himself, Jaime Collet Serra, eyed to direct DC's Black Adam starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Jungle Cruise director Jaime Collet Serra and Dwayne Johnson are reuniting for Johnson's first foray into the comic book world. Sources tell Variety that Collet Serra is in negotiations to direct Johnson in the new film Black Adam, based on the DC Comics character. According to insiders, the film is a priority to the studio following the success of Shazam. In addition to the hype surrounding Johnson's first entry into the superhero realm, as for Collet Serra's The Shallows, director has been a front runner for the film ever since his work with Johnson and producers Danny Garcia, Hiram Garcia, and Bo Flynn on Disney's Jungle Cruise. Johnson was very impressed with how Collet Serra handled himself on such a large production and was surprised how seamlessly he was able to transition from darker material to more lighter material with such ease. Once production ended on Jungle Cruise, the decision to name him the director of Black Adam was an easy one to make. Flynn of Flynn Picture Company will produce along with Johnson, Danny Garcia, Hiram Garcia of Seven Bucks Productions. Scott Sheldon will oversee for Flynn Pictures Company. And Adam Sitzko, who worked with Johnson on Flynn on Rampage, wrote the latest draft. A new line plan to introduce Johnson as Black Adam in the first Shazam film. Okay, we already talked about this when The Rock did that Instagram post on IGTV. Look, I'm so happy that this is moving up. And I had a feeling that we were, you know, that this movie was a little bit too silent, Brad, after Shazam finished. You know, I was wondering, like, you know, when are we going to get hit with some news about Black Adam? And I'm glad that they finally have a director. So, you know, what's it called? The Rock said that they'd be starting to get ready to start, you know, shooting this soon. And I think we're headed there. I'm really, really excited for this. And then, you know, the fact that The Rock confirmed this to be true. So, you know, Jungle Cruise comes out in 2020. And it stars Emily Blunt as well and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. But, Brad, what are your thoughts on, you know, Black Adam getting a new director? Well, getting a director, because they didn't have one before.
Well, I'm glad to see Black Adam going forward. But I question them not bringing back David Sandberg. Because he did so well on Shazam. I mean, I question that. So I'm really hoping they bring him on as maybe an executive producer or some sort. Because if he ends up doing the second Shazam, I think, because, you know, Black Adam, to me, that's going to be the main villain for that.
Yeah.
So, well, I think there should be some, like, correlation between those.
Yeah. I hope that, you know, he's consulting the movie at least. But then again, Black Adam is a very different character from Shazam. So, I would...
No, I agree. But if you're going to have them merge into the Shazam world, you know, it should fit.
Yeah.
And, you know, they might do a different, totally different vision for Black Adam than the original Shazam, because let's face it, Shazam was a lighthearted DC movie. Like, if they just go totally dark with Black Adam, which they may, it's the character. So, you know, and then how do they transition to the second Shazam? I don't know.
Well, we'll see, man. I think that this is just, I'm just happy that this movie got a director, you know, because it had been so silent for some time, even so silent as to be able to believe that maybe The Rock isn't involved in this anymore, and maybe this is one of those projects at DC that just kind of got scrapped, you know, like all those other movies that they had planned. You know, we haven't heard the news about Nightwing for so long, and that was supposed to happen, and, you know, I really thought that this movie was never going to move forward. And, you know, we have a director now, which is awesome. And we have a draft for the script. And I think that they're going to move on. And I want to say, you know, because we have two movies planned out for 2021 already. There's two movies for 2020, 2021. We already have two movies. I think that you could add this to the end of 2021, or you can maybe have Black Adam open 2022. But I don't know if 2022 would be a long time. Because remember, I think we have Aquaman 2 for 2022.
And to go back to your worries, I wasn't really worried this movie wasn't happening after Shazam, mm-hmm. because we knew Black Adam was the next big figure in that whole kind of storyline. But let's face it, The Rock's busy on like multiple freaking movies, like everywhere. And he's busy like tweeting and Instagramming Tyrese, telling him to shut up about Hobbs and Shaw. So it really didn't surprise me that we didn't hear anything from The Rock about this.
All right, well, I'm going to move on to some more DC news. I'm going to go skip a couple of stories, Brad, to go over here, because I forgot to organize them as correctly as I wanted them to be organized. But we'll come back to these other ones that I'm skipping.
See how you is?
Yeah, whatever. Look, Margot Robbie sat down with Vogue, and they had an interview. And they talked about a little bit about, the Tarantino movie, but they also talked about Birds of Prey. And this is really, really interesting because, Brad, right now Shazam is the lowest budget film that they've done at the DC Universe right now at $100 million. But it looks like that's going to change because let me go ahead and read you this. Today we're on the set of Birds of Prey, which Robbie developed and pitched to Warner Brothers as an R-rated, female-led superhero action film, a commercialized product of a new Hollywood if there ever was one. I think there's a perception for a PG female-led action film is kind of considered a chick flick, says Robbie. At $75 million, this is Lucky Chap's largest production to date, but Robbie seems unperturbed. Unperturbed? Well, we're on schedule and on budget, which is a wonderful place to be. In Birds, which is due out next year, Robbie will reprise her 2016 Suicide Squad role as Harley Quinn, the Joker's ex. But today, she's primarily a producer wandering the set in jeans and a smiley face t-shirt with two hearts for eyes. Her cell phone suspended from a rope of a place of a purse, and she introduces me to the women who work with her. Kathy Yan, a director, Jody, the script supervisor, Sue, a producer. We ran into Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who has spent the day performing stunts as Huntress, a crossbow-wielding vigilante. Winstead pulls down her track pants to reveal a bruise on her hip. Sure. Oh, no, he says sure. Shit, Robbie says. That looks legit. All right. Look, man, $75 million? That, for a low-budget film with the right market? Because look. What's it called? You look at the opening weekends for Shazam and Aquaman. And those sets, some people might say that Shazam didn't have the best marketing. I think it did have really good marketing. And Aquaman, of course, had a really good marketing to get it $1 billion. With the right marketing that those two movies got, you're going to be making more than a profit with this one. For sure.
Well, I mean, Suicide Squad cost $175 million to make.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically just took off $100 million for the Birds of Prey movie.
Yeah,
if you think about it, and you're probably gonna get a better product out of it. So I don't think anybody should sweat that $75 million number. Mm-hmm. I think people have learned from that first Deadpool that you don't need to spend a lot of money in order to make a huge load of money. Like, just make a fucking good movie.
Yeah. And I think that this is going to work in their favor, especially for them to get that, that small budget feel to the movie. I'm really interested. I want to know what the budget is for Joker, but I think that this is awesome. I think that this is what, DC needs to work with as well, with some of these characters that are more grounded, where you don't need to spend a lot of money on it. Of course, with Aquaman and those type of movies, you're going to need to spend to make money. And obviously, you saw returns at the box office for that. But with characters like, Birds of Prey, Gotham City Sirens, where it's so grounded in Gotham, you don't need to be spending that much money on that.
No,
honestly.
Yeah, you don't need a lot of that green screen and CGI and all that nonsense. Also, the Joker budget is $55 million.
Oh, man, that's crazy. So, that's, I'm telling you, man, it's you don't need to have this big, big budget film for some of these characters that are like so, grounded. And I think that reflected well in Shazam as well.
Well, I think that's where DC is going to now, is they're focusing on the content versus the bank account.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to get much better because the movies DC was putting out, they weren't making that Marvel money. And they were spending as much or more than Marvel. Mm-hmm. So I think they've gone back. They're going, okay, we're going to get a good cast. We're going to get a good production team. But we don't need all that CGI. We don't need all that hokey shit. Yeah. So let's just do that. And I think DC is going to come out on top in these future years just for making good movies.
Yeah. And I'm really excited for this. And, I'm going to be really, really excited to see what the budget will be for the Batman as well. Because, you know, that's going to be really interesting to see. But let's go ahead and move on to some other news. You know, we're done with the DC stuff here until we get to TV news. But we've got some stuff about the Ghostbusters here. And, you know, Sigourney Weaver had an interview with Parade, the magazine Parade, and she brought up a little bit something about Ghostbusters 3. And this is might be something that might tickle your fancy, my friends, but I got to go and search up in Command F about the Ghostbusters, because, you know. And, yeah, hold up, man. I got to go and search here. She talked about Alien, you know, Avatar and all that stuff. Okay, here, look. This is what they wrote down here. She'll soon head back to New Zealand, where she's been at work filming the live and CGI portions of the long-awaited effects-driven Avatar sequels. Because her Avatar character died at the end of the 2009 original, she'll be playing someone new in the next four installments, the first of which is scheduled on the big screen in 2021. She's also set to reunite with Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd in the new Ghostbusters due July 2020. It's going to be crazy working with the guys again, she says. She won't reveal any details to confirm she's reprising her role as Haunty Dana Barrett, though. That's her only thing that she's saying, that she's reprising her role, and she's bringing back the gang with her, too. She's bringing back Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd. So, I think that this is going down the route that might just be smart on Jason Reitman. You know, you bring in the original cast, but you also cast these new up-and-coming guys, so that way you're able to get both sides of the movie audience. You know, the old school, but also the newer film audience. Brad, what do you think about that?
I'm just questioning how much of this movie Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd are actually going to be in, including Sigourney Weaver. Because I really feel like he's going to throw them in there for like 10 minutes. That's all we're going to see of them.
You would think, the son of the original director of Ghostbusters, I don't think you'd do that.
I don't know. I mean, they made a whole Ghostbusters without any of them. So, I don't have trust for Ghostbusters movies. If it was just the original cast, maybe. But since they're bringing the new people, they're going to want to get more of those new people on the screen more so people get used to them. So they can make a sequel out of it or a few sequels. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to get a lot of screen time for Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, or Sigourney Weaver. I really don't.
One would hope so, though, because those are great actresses and actors. And I think that that's going to play more in their favor, because you need to get the old school people, but you also need to get the new ones in. So, you know, I would hope that they're planning something right, but remember, this movie doesn't come out until next year, I think. And it's going to be interesting to see how this goes, but I'm still confused as to what I want out of this movie, you know? Like, I don't know if I really want this movie. At the same time, I love Ghostbusters, so I'll go watch it, but I don't think that this is something that I'm, you know, clawing my way to go watch, you know?
I mean, I'm not overly excited for it. I think they did the original Ghostbusters as well as they could, and they should just keep it at that. But at the same time, I will watch the trailer if I find something exciting with it. But to me, this looks, unfortunately, like a cash grab. And I really don't think Bill Murray or Dan Aykroyd are going to be in that movie long.
Yeah, I would hope that they are, though, because, you know, they're just so big in that, you know, they're such an integral part of the, you know, the original film. So, but I mean, look, let's just go ahead and move past this. But, you know, I'd really like to hear what you guys think about that. So, you know, send us a voice message on Anchor. So do that and tell us what you think about the original cast coming back. Do you think they're going to be on for like 10 minutes, 20 minutes, or the whole movie? I don't know. But here's something that you...
Or if the producers, the director want to get on with us and prove me wrong, you know, come talk to us.
Jason Reitman, you know, it'd be a nice sign to have you on here, man. Mm-hmm. We're respectful people.
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah. The Wall Street Journal is talking about a potential price to that AT&T Warner Media streaming service, and it's not a pretty number. They're eyeing a $16 to $17 a month streaming service in Strategy Shift. And the new package is expected to include HBO, Cinemax, and Warner Brothers content for barely more than HBO's current streaming service. So AT&T Incorporated, Warner Media is discussing plans to package HBO, sister channel Cinemax, and its vast Warner Brothers TV and movie library into a streaming service, costing between $16 and $17 a month, according to people familiar with the matter, a strategy aimed at keeping the media giant competitive against lower-priced offerings in a crowded field. The new streaming service, which will debut in beta form later this year, and essentially includes all of Warner Brothers Entertainment's offerings and will feature its own new original content, yet it will cost barely more than company's standalone HBO Now streaming service, which sells for $14.99 a month. Cinemax, meanwhile, can cost as much as $12.99 a month for cable customers. AT&T is under pressure to competitively price its service in a landscape where consumers will have many options, including Netflix's deep library of original and licensed content for $12.99 a month, and a much-anticipated Disney Plus service launching in November that will charge $6.99 a month for an array of programming based on the company's franchise, such as Star Wars and Marvel. On top of this, Apple and Comcast Corporation's NBC Universal have plans to launch streaming service in fall in 2020, respectively. Consumers have limited money and a growing... Okay, yeah, whatever. They talk about Sling TV and, you know, Dish Network and all that, whatever. HBO already cost that much. So if you're paying, you know, $16-$17 for the Warner Bros. Stuff and for HBO plus Cinemax, I can see where you can see that as a deal, but chances are that we don't know yet what is coming to Warner Brothers, you know, original content. So I think people would need to watch for that first. Plus,
I mean, if that Warner Brothers content included some of the DC stuff, maybe.
Yeah.
But let's face it, HBO isn't really offering anything right now after Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they'll still be. And then I don't know about Cinemax.
I don't think there's anything on Cinemax that I'm trying to watch.
Unless you want like softcore porn like at fucking midnight. I don't know.
Yeah. I know that once Westworld season 3 comes around, that's when I'm going to be huge on HBO. I'm trying to finish up Chernobyl as well right now, but you know, right now my HBO is kind of silent at the moment. You know, there's good movies on there that I watch, but you know, series, actual original series, there's nothing that I'm kind of watching at the moment.
No, I mean I think they said it right when there was a mass exodus after Game of Thrones ended. Until HBO, although HBO will be bringing out some good stuff soon. So I think they'll be getting those people back, but I think the loss of Game of Thrones is really going to hurt them for a little bit.
Yeah, until the prequel series hits, or we get, you know, when we get Watchmen and Westworld season 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Look, Disney Plus will be $6.99 a month. I 100% expect them to do a other price, you know, at least like $10.99, and you get Hulu with it. I bet. I 100% bet you, Brad, that they're going to announce some sort of deal.
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, Disney's in it to make money. So they already have Hulu. They already have everything else.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. All right. So Brian Tyree Henry is in talks to join Emily Blunt in A Quiet Place 2 for an exclusive from the rap of written by Beatrice. Now you need to go ahead and zoom in. Beatrice Verhoeven and Humberto Gonzalez. Brian Tyree Henry, man. He needs to be in all the movies, man. Brian Tyree Henry is in negotiations to join Emily Blunt in John Krasinski's A Quiet Place 2. An individual with knowledge of the project told The Wrap exclusively. Cillian Murphy, Melissa Simmons, and Noah Jupe are also joining in the sequel for which Krasinski is also writing the script. Plot details are being kept under wraps. A Quiet Place starred Krasinski, Blunt, Jupe, and Simmons, and grossed over $340 million at the global box office. Since then, the film has won several awards, including the Critics' Choice for Best Sci-Fi Horror Movie and Screen Actor Guild Award for Blunt. Krasinski also wrote the screenplay. No word yet about whether he's going to be directing it, guys, but look, I'm a big fan of Brian Tyrese Henry, man. You know, I'm glad that he's in this movie, Tyree Henry. Brad, what do you think about this?
I think that's a good casting. Yeah. I mean, you can't have John. Well, spoiler alert. You can't have John Krasinski in Quiet Place 2. Let's face it. If you watch the first one, again, spoiler alert. You know, John Krasinski will not be in Quiet Place 2.
Yeah. Well, unless you know they pull something out of the rug and we get Force Ghost Krasinski, but
or you get like alien dog wearing Krasinski's head. I don't know.
Yeah. Look, I'm really excited to see Brian Tyree Henry in this, and I'm really excited to see where this movie goes. I really hope we get more casting information, because I don't want it to be the same people in the first movie. I kind of want to see more people come in, and I think having Brian Tyree Henry in that is going to put something new on the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's good. It's a good casting. I can't hate on it. So.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I really liked A Quiet Place.
Me too.
That was one of the better thriller horrors, I think, of last year, the year before last year.
Mm.
And yeah, I'm looking forward to watching A Quiet Place too.
Yeah. All right. The last news story for today. It is with a heavy heart that we announce from Deadline.com, written by Nelly Andreeva. The Swamp Thing has been canceled by DC Universe after one season. And it has been confirmed by multiple sources, one of them being the producer of the TV show, James Wan, on his Instagram. Let me go ahead and read you guys this. The DC service, DC Universe, will not be picking up a second season of Swamp Thing. It's a drama series based on the DC characters created by Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson. According to sources, the series, which premiered on May 31st, hailed from James Wan's Atomic Monster, is in association with Warner Bros. Television. Like every other initiative, DC Universe is being reevaluated following the completion of AT&T's acquisition of Time Warner, as Warner Media has put an emphasis on the launch of a new streaming platform. There has also been questions how DC Universe fits into these plans. There's already been chatter that new leadership of Warner Media was not particularly high on Swamp Thing, whose order was reduced from 13 to 10 episodes in April. The cancellation comes just one episode into the show's run. The 9 remaining episodes will continue to air on a schedule with a new one debuting on DC Universe each Friday through the August 2nd finale. Swamp Thing was the third live-action series to launch on DC Universe following Titans, which has been renewed for a second season, and Doom Patrol, which is awaiting a word upcoming on the service's new drama series, Stargirl. Okay, so they did not mention something really important here. That there was something to note here about the Swamp Thing stuff. And I'm going to go ahead and look for that Twitter thread. By the way, DC Universe said how, you know, this is not affecting the other shows. This doesn't affect Titan Season 2, what's it called, and Stargirl. You know, that's still on, you know, on its way to coming out. And, you know, I'm trying to find this, man, because it was...
Well, the issue they had is that they were expecting a $40 million
tax
credit back from North Carolina. And I think they only received 12 or 14 million of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you ended up with is really expensive episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if you can't afford to pay for the episodes and you're not getting the money you're expecting back,
it's going to be too expensive.
From the state, it's going to be too expensive. So I totally get why. And this doesn't look bad on any of the cast or the show itself. It's just an issue with money.
Yeah.
And the state didn't come through with their tax credit. And
mm-hmm.
so, of course, DC is going to, you know, cancel or move their work. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really all it comes down to is greenbacks.
Yeah. I have a feeling that once, you know, the new Warner Media streaming service gets done and they somehow move this DC content over there, we'll probably see a season 2. But, you know, It's a big thing when you don't have the money to make these shows, and I bet there is some sort of creative difference over there. Whatever, You know, people, this got a lot of really good reviews. This show had really, really good reviews, and people were actually liking this. So I was surprised to see that they canceled it. But when you read about the tax rebates, you understand, yeah, this, like, it was, and now I understand why they brought it down to 10 episodes, because they probably did not have enough money to shoot those last three, you know? So,
yeah,
it's sadly a money issue, and budgeting is a big thing in the filmmaking process, and if there is no money, then, sorry, guys, it season two just won't happen.
Yeah, there's no show. I mean, I think we'll end up getting a really good season one, and I think we all have to just be happy with that, and there may not be another season two. But you may be right, the eternal optimist that you are, Raul, and they will move to a different state, they will get a different tax credit, and they will make a second season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's sad, man, because Alex was really, really enjoying this, and, you know, sadly, it got canceled. And I haven't watched it yet because, honestly, I like to watch shows as they're completed. You know, the only other show that I watched on a weekly basis was Game of Thrones. But that's because, you know, I love Game of Thrones so much. So I need to start Doom Patrol soon. But I'm not going to watch Swamp Thing.
I mean, Swamp Thing, to me, is also one of those niche characters. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a hard sell. It's not like... like a Superman or, you know, like a Batman. It's one of those niche monsters. Yeah. That's how I see it. So I can see, you know, why they're only doing one season. I think it'd be a different story if it was like a Superman or a Batman or something that they know that they'll bring in far more profit.
Yeah. So it's going to be, you know, something to keep an eye on. But it's sad, man, because, you know, the people who worked on this probably did such a crazy, immense, great job, and sadly, you know, they're not being renewed for a second season, and it was canceled literally a week after the first episode premieres. So,
you know, I think AMC should pick this up and cancel The Walking Dead.
You know, Brad, I think this just should go to HBO.
Give a show for HBO. Yeah, I mean, and HBO needs to go looking, I guess.
And you know what? And I'll raise you, Brad. Have Guillermo del Toro produce it, because he was doing Justice League Dark. No, Justice League Dark includes Swamp Thing. So, you know, move it to HBO, have Guillermo produce it, and use a little bit of that stuff that he had in that Justice League Dark script, and I think that you'd have a big hit there.
Why don't they hire us to, like, come up with these ideas of, like, making good shit?
Because I don't know how to pitch. Yeah,
I don't doubt you that this will maybe find a new home. I mean I can see AMC picking it up. That's just one of those weird things AMC could do.
Yeah,
I mean, Walking Dead needs to come to a close at some fucking point, and I can see them picking up. I can also see HBO throwing it on there because of The Watchmen. So you already have, you know, a series based on a comic book. Why not bring in another one? And then you can also kind of go from Swamp Thing, and then you can bring back Constantine, and then you can have Justice League Dark. You could do a whole freaking series on this.
Yeah. Just as long as it doesn't go to the CW, because that will be terrible. Yeah, you need a big budget for that. You need a good budget, which CW just...
And the actresses and actors that end up being in that start cults, and then... It just gets weird from there.
So let's go ahead and just we're done here with the news. We got one trailer to talk about, and it is the trailer for the upcoming space movie Ad Astra, which stars, you know, Brad Pitt, Ruth Negga, Tommy Lee Jones, and more. But it's being produced by Plan B Entertainment, which is Brad Pitt's company, which I thought it was Annapurna, but it was not Annapurna. This movie comes out September 20th, 2019. And, you know, when this movie was first announced, it was really quiet. Then the purchase of Fox happens, and there was no word about whether this film was going to come out. And it disappeared from the release schedule. And you were like, okay, what the hell is happening here? and we finally got a new release. We got a release for it, got a release date for it when they showed that new schedule for the Disney films, and now it's going to be released. This is a Fox film, and I'm really, really, really excited for this. So it's basically about an astronaut that went missing in space, and now his son is going to go and try to find him. The film looks amazing. It looks like it's going to be really, really good, and I cannot wait to watch this. I mean, this is giving me Interstellar vibes. Some of those shots were kind of reminiscent of 2001 A Space Odyssey, and I mean, just the look of the movie looks amazing, Brad.
I totally agree. I'm coming off of Brad Pitt high after we saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the trailer, mm-hmm. after we watched the assassination of Jesse mm-hmm. James by the coward Robert Ford. So I'm coming off of Brad Pitt high and seeing this trailer. I mean, it just kept going. It's just like this is an amazing looking film. I want to watch this. Yeah,
I mean, the hairs on my arm stood up, and I watched it a second time. So, you know, this looks really, really, really good. If I knew that this movie was coming out in 2019, I would have put this in my most anticipated 2019 when we did that episode. You know, I'm really, really excited to watch this in September. And I mean, you know, the Academy loves their space movies, so you never know. If this goes as well as it does, this might just be a really good year for Brad Pitt, Brad.
I think so. I think he could be nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and maybe Best Actor category for this.
Yeah, we'll never know, man. But in the meantime, you know, this is the end. This is the end game. This is where we finish here. So thank you all for listening.
This is the end, my friends.
This is my end, my friends, you know. But we got a really good week for them. You know, as always, it's been a fun time talking with you guys. Tomorrow, you will have a special episode because we will be... Well, I'm sorry. I'm thinking about tomorrow. We're recording something else. Tomorrow's review will be El Mariachi for Robert Rodriguez Film Month. And then we have... Jason Inman coming in to talk about Super Soldiers, which I just pre-ordered, and you guys can go pre-order too. Go to Amazon.com, search up Super Soldiers, and go to that book and you know, pre-order it. It's about, you know, his look at comic book characters while he was a comic book characters that served in the military while Jason was doing his time in Iraq. So it's a really, really cool synopsis, and just go help out somebody, you know, that we love a lot at this podcast. So we'll have him on to talk about that for the discussion episode. And then Brad, on Saturday, we don't have anything set for review. I did want to watch that When They See Us, that Ava DuVernay series. I don't know how many episodes that is, but you know,
there was something else. I'll have to see what else I watched on Netflix. It was really good.
Always and Be My Maybe.
I'm maybe not we can do it on that. I don't know.
I'm not watching another fucking rom-com. I'm just telling you that.
No, it wasn't a rom-com. It was... What the hell did I watch? I don't know. I'll figure it out.
Whatever. I do want to talk about that Central Park 5 series from Ava DuVernay. But we'll see what's up. We'll let you guys know as we go what will be Saturday's review. But thank you, guys. Go ahead and leave a written review on your podcast app of choice. Follow us on Twitter at @TheNerdCore_, Instagram at @TheNerdCore, Facebook page at @TheNerdCorePods. Go and join our Facebook group at @NerdCore, at facebook.com/group/TheNerdCore, and join the Nerdverse, the official Nerdcore group. Also, shout out to our executive producers, Grayson Barker, the OG, at GraysonBarker98 on Instagram, WarlordHitman98 on Twitter. Journey as well at Mocha_Jorn, JOURN on Twitter. Brad, say Shane's.
One second. Let me get on his Twitter. That's the easiest way.
It's XSR.
Yeah, you can't do it, so you just be quiet. So Shane is twitch.tv/SRRKK, or you can follow him on Twitter at @SRRKKTwitch.
Okay. Yeah, it's hard, man. It's hard.
There's too many K's and too many R's.
Yeah, it's just R, okay. Yeah. Look, it's been a fun time, and we'll see you guys tomorrow for the Mariachi review. That will be really fun. And, you know, have a good day, and I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. But in the meantime, Brad, Sentiments of Podcast Void.
All right, Rome. Thank you for being host as always. Thank you to all our listeners out there, all our Patreon supporters. We truly appreciate each and every one of you. We are so close to 40,000 listens. Thank you all.
Taste it.
And I guess in the next episode, we review the debut of Robert Rodriguez. Young Yoda out.